Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and today we are talking media. Specifically, we are discussing the show Transparent, which is available brilliantly only on Amazon Prime. Brilliantly because you're going to get like the 2-day shipping or whatever on everything, so you might as well just go ahead and get Amazon Prime, because then you also get to watch this TV show and it's only the 10 episodes. So you could do like a month of it and you could binge watch it in probably like 3 nights. Anyway, so the new show, Transparent. This centers on a character played by Jeffrey Tambor, whom you hopefully know and love from Arrested Development. Jeffrey Tambor is playing Maura Pfefferman, who is a trans woman who makes a decision later in life, in her probably 50s, 60s, to start living as her true self, to start dressing as she actually wants to and identifying as a woman. It's a phenomenal show. I debated doing this in an entirely spoiler-free format, but I don't think that's the point. I thought about it real hard about not wanting to spoil any plot points for you, and I'll still do my best. So if you haven't seen the show, I'm not going to ruin anything, but we're going to talk about things that happen in the course of it that are relevant without ruining anything. So because this show is so character-driven, because this show is so much about like the feelings of the scenes rather than, oh God, what's going to happen, I want to say a little bit of spoiler alert. So if you're a total purist, maybe just check this show out after you've actually watched it. But otherwise, let's talk about Transparent. Allie's undergoing, as I mentioned, her own adventure and figuring herself out. All of Maura's kids are incredibly self-centered, and what becomes obvious very quickly through the course of the show is that in their quest to find themselves and find their happiness, they tend to get even more and more self-focused and less kind to other people. And Allie has, you know, this way of using sexuality to like sort of just experience the world. Her best friend, Sid, is played by Carrie Brownstein, who you probably know from either Sleater Kinney or Portlandia, or you know, be like, oh, that girl. And her friend Sid sort of describes Allie as being someone who just like has to experience the world through her vagina. So you know, if somebody's a tactile learner, they have to like pick it up and like move the object around in their hands and look at it from different angles under the light and like to experience it and understand how it works. And that Allie's character, you know, like to understand something, experience it, to empathize with it, has to experience it through her vagina. And it's really interesting because she kind of does. Like, for her to learn, that's how she experiences things. She has this fascinating trip where she's on ecstasy, and during the course of it has some incredible insights that, like, interestingly enough, I'd been like on the same wavelength with her when she had her insight. So I was like, yay, I'm glad we joined forces there. So that's weird, you know, identifying with the hypersexual character. Anyway, enough about me. So she does that, and she like learns about trans stuff by just, you know, completely coincidentally, you know, dating a trans person in the course of the show. So, in this, she's not really thinking about these people as people. Like, this is just how she learns about stuff, and it's interesting because like the detritus she leaves behind her, although she's not actively mean, she's not like a pickup artist, she's not like, I'll call you and then doesn't, that's just not how it is. She just learns the world through sex, and it's fascinating. She's kind of a mess, like career-wise, money-wise, life-wise, in those ways. But I appreciate that the show doesn't make her sexuality be the epitome of her messiness or a symptom of her messiness. They just depict it as like the way, you know, one of the many ways in which she doesn't necessarily handle things appropriately. But it's without a ton of judgment, and I appreciate that. So the whole show, set in LA, and actually, my friend Paul pointed out this is the most realistically LA show that he's seen in a long time, which I think is really true. Like, lots of little cute things, like the fact that, you know, the character Allie takes an Uber ride home specifically, and the way that the houses look and the streets look, it's certainly the version of LA of privileged white Jewish people, because that's going to be most of the characters. So it's a limited representation of LA, but it actually very much feels like being there as opposed to the shows that are actually shot in Vancouver. You know what I'm talking about? Like the L word. So the whole thing takes place in LA, and as I mentioned, centers around Maura Pfefferman, who is a woman now on the brink of her adventure in the world, coming out one person at a time until she tells all of North America, as she mentions in a group session with other people at the LGBT Center. She has to first come out to all of her family members, and that includes a colorful cast of amazing characters, her children, her ex-wife, the other people in her life. And what's interesting is that while Maura is undergoing this pretty significant transition of coming out to the whole world, she is by far the most stable character and also probably the nicest. So while she's going through this piece in her life, the other characters are all going through their own changes and senses of identity, confusion situations, and learning about themselves and how they relate to the world. And ultimately, at the crux of it is this is a family that has sort of organized around secrets. And my friend Jessie pointed out, she's like, do you think that all of this results because of this one major secret, Maura's major secret? And it's a really interesting question because it's like, you know, chicken or egg. Like, did this family become this way because one person had a secret? Or is it just sort of like that's the nature of their dynamic, that's how they've developed their functionalities? Did it have something to do with each one of them individually, or did they learn this from each other? It's a really good question. So looking at Maura's family, I just want to, just from the jump, the very first character who leaps to my mind is really interesting because the character Allie, who's the youngest daughter of Maura Pfefferman, Allie is played by Gabby Hoffman, who you may or may not remember from when she was a child star. She was in, like, Field of Dreams, Now and Then, those sort of things. And she's kind of off the radar for a little bit. She's mostly in indie stuff now. But it's really interesting because she was a child star before they were under, like, a total microscope. So she has sort of escaped that level of scrutiny, and she still remains enough tabula rasa that we can, you know, see her as her characters rather than this person we saw as a little kid. But Gabby Hoffman plays a very sexually active, sex-driven character. And what's interesting about that is not necessarily that, you know, it's just a promiscuous character or something like that. She's not depicted as the stereotypical promiscuous character. Because I think for the most part in television, if you're going to have somebody have a lot of sex, you're going to also have them have a specific look. And for men, they're going to be, you know, very debonair and handsome, and it's going to make a lot of sense. The Jason Stackhouses, for instance, it's going to be really obvious why this person has a lot of sex, because who wouldn't? And then you're also going to see the very sex kitten-y looking women who, you know, display their curves a lot and have the long hair and a very hyper femme. Or if it's in, you know, sort of a gay universe, like, for instance, an L word, you're going to see a Shane who's just got that sort of dripping sexuality androgyny thing going on. Lots of, you know, tight clothes and, like, just also part of her attitude. This character's different. The character of Allie is totally different. She's awkward. She makes comically weird faces. She is not concerned with the conventions of, like, that sex kitten look. She has sort of unruly hair that she eventually just cuts to some, like, fascinatingly short but not pixie-ish lengths. She doesn't wear makeup. She's got some sort of unruly eyebrows, and she does not dress in a way that's, like, considered flattering. And that, I think, is fascinating, because there's just not a character that I've ever seen quite like that. And that, in and of itself, I thought warranted noticing. One of Maura's other children, the one who is just slightly older than Allie, is Josh Pfefferman. He's the middle son. He's played by Jay Duplass. You're more likely to actually know his brother. His brother, Mark Duplass, is in a bunch of indie films, and you definitely would be like, oh, I know that guy's face. Anyway, Jay Duplass, I'd not ever seen him before, does a phenomenal job playing Josh, who is a music producer, again, in LA. So it's very much all of the things that you would picture with that. Like, he's super concerned with appearances and has a really cool house and everything's about right now. And it's all the coolest, the best, and all those sort of things. But he's not necessarily like a showy, offy consumer type. So it's not like he's driving around like a super fancy car, or that he's defined by the brands he's wearing so much. It's a different kind of thing. And we get to learn through his backstory why he has the penchant that he does. But he and Ali have a lot in common in terms of the way that they interact with people sexually. So they both have a lot of sex, and they both sort of use people through that without necessarily meaning to. It's not necessarily in their consciousness that they're using people. But for him, it's about love and this perception that he is madly in love with people, that they're madly in love with him, and they've never met anyone like him, and what they have is real and significant, and this is meaningful, and none of this is lecherous, and none of this is bad. And it relates back to things that happened to him when he was younger, and this validating of sexual behavior. And it's not that he's addicted to the sexual behavior per se. It's more about the addiction to the feeling with that person that this is something significant. It's a really interesting dynamic. And again, not something I've seen a lot in TV, because he's like a dude who gets a lot of like pussy or whatever, but he's not like pick up artisty about it. He's not like suave, like super charming dude. He's kind of awkward, and he gets referred to as creepy like a couple times. But he is so sincere seeming, even though he's, you know, not necessarily hypersensitive about actually being a good partner to any of these people. But he's not sort of depicted in a traditional gender way in any way. Like, he's not a bro dude. He's not like suave guy. He's not necessarily like your standard douchebag, even if some of his behavior is douchey. Again, there's a little bit of awkward that makes him a little bit lovable. And I appreciate that while the show is, like, theoretically about this parent who's trans, all the kids seem to have their own gender stuff, too. And it's not necessarily like, oh, your parent had a fucked up gender thing, therefore you're going to be fucked up. It's just that all of these characters, there's so many ways in which gender is interesting and complex. It's that everybody in reality is some fascinating mixture of masculinity, femininity, and really people don't fall into these boxes that we're usually told on TV. Like, those are characters that are just minimalized, made as simple as possible so that, you know, people can get the show really easily. But this one doesn't need you to buy a lot of soap to keep on the air. This one's on Amazon Prime, so it gets to take these more complex, nuanced turns. So looking at Maura's family, I just want to, just from the jump, the very first character who leaps to my mind is really interesting, because the character Ali, who's the youngest daughter of Maura Pfefferman, Ali is played by Gabby Hoffman, who you may or may not remember from when she was a child star. She was in, like, Field of Dreams, Now and Then, those sort of things. And she's kind of off the radar for a little bit. She's mostly in indie stuff now. But it's really interesting because she was a child star before they were under, like, a total microscope. So she has sort of escaped that level of scrutiny, and she still remains enough tabula rasa that we can, you know, see her as her characters rather than this person we saw as a little kid. But Gabby Hoffman plays a very sexually active, sex-driven character. And what's interesting about that is not necessarily that, you know, it's just a promiscuous character or something like that. She's not depicted as the stereotypical promiscuous character. Because I think for the most part in television, if you're going to have somebody have a lot of sex, you're going to also have them have a specific look. And for men, they're going to be, you know, very debonair and handsome, and it's going to make a lot of sense. The Jason Stackhouses, for instance, it's going to be really obvious why this person has a lot of sex, because who wouldn't? And then you're also going to see the very sex kitten-y looking women who, you know, display their curves a lot and have the long hair and a very hyper femme. Or if it's in, you know, sort of a gay universe, like, for instance, an L Word, you're going to see a Shane who's just got that sort of dripping sexuality androgyny thing going on. lots of, you know, tight clothes and, like, just also part of her attitude. This character's different. The character of Allie is totally different. She's awkward. She makes comically weird faces. She is not concerned with the conventions of, like, that sex kitten look. She has sort of unruly hair that she eventually just cuts to some, like, fascinatingly short but not pixie-ish lengths. She doesn't wear makeup. She's got some sort of unruly eyebrows, and she does not dress in a way that's, like, considered flattering. And that, I think, is fascinating, because there's just not a character that I've ever seen quite like that. And that, in and of itself, I thought warranted noticing. Maura's oldest daughter, who is Sarah Pfefferman, she's played by Amy Landecker, who originally was a theater person and just actually got into TV and movies late. She's got a fairly good, you know, CV to her resume, probably you haven't seen her before. She plays a very interesting character who comes from a very fancy, proper people marriage with the adorable children and the very nice house, and she does a lot of yoga and blah, 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 and decides to basically throw it away for a relationship with a woman who she had previously been involved in. And it's interesting the way it goes down. It's interesting the ways in which she sort of lets her choices overlap with her mom, dad, Maura's transition, sort of letting Maura's transition be the umbrella under which she makes her own sort of major changes and leaps. And it's not necessarily that the choice she makes is either good or bad. It's clear that she needs to make changes in her life from where she starts, but she's just sort of like taking random grasps and trying random things because she knows she needs to mix it up. And in the course of that, goes from being the most put together of the characters in the show, the one who seems the most compassionate, is immediately cool with Maura's transition and is the most cheerleader of, like, everybody needs to be on board with this, and, you know, it's nobody else's position to out Maura or anything like that. She's the most compassionate, but as the show goes on, you start to realize she's also probably the most selfish, which is a turn that's sort of fun to watch as you realize that she's a bigger mess than she ever wanted to let on. But she's riveting to watch as well. The performance is phenomenal from Amy Landecker. It's I really can't go into it too much without being, like, super spoilery. But her girlfriend, you will definitely recognize, Melora Hardin, probably from The Office. So that's pretty cool, seeing her as this, like, semi-soft butch dyke. It's pretty cool. So it's a pretty good rough intro of all the people that are major characters in the show. And again, the show isn't really about what happens, although a lot happens, but it's largely symbolic. And much of this first season, Jill Soloway, the producer, has said in interviews that it revolves around this house, this childhood house where Allie, Sarah, and Josh were raised, where Maura lived up until the time that she decides to start living, you know, as a woman openly in the world, that this house is symbolic of all the changes going on and the power struggles and the ways in which the various characters are trying to exert themselves. And I think that in ensuing seasons, because again, the word is that this is just the first season and it's only 10 episodes. You could watch this whole thing in one shot if you really felt like it, because they're only 30 minutes. So set aside 5 hours, maybe 5.5, so you have breaks for peeing. I'm assuming you're drinking, so you're going to pee a couple times. Anyway, the whole show you could watch in one night if you really felt like it. And, I don't necessarily suggest that because I think you want some time to, like, really bask it and think about it and discuss it with the people you're watching it with. Like, what do you think of these people and, you know, the characters and what they're representative and where they are in their lives and those sort of things. There's lots of really interesting choices, and I appreciate so many of them. Like, for instance, there's a really small but significant detail that the character of Allie, when she does ecstasy, she ends up, out on her own in the city and, you know, takes this Uber ride home. And in any other stupidly written show, this real cliche, like, the whole thing would be about how dangerous this is. A woman out on her own on drugs, and oh God, she's going to get victimized. But it lets the character exist and be a person and, like, not have to constantly be, you know, sort of target, which is nice. It's very nice to just, like, be able to chill for a minute. And, like, it's not anti-feminist for a female character to navigate the world without being harassed. So, just little touches like that I really appreciate. And the fact that there are lots of trans actors and actresses who are in the show, because they're not any of those main characters, which is a thing I guess we'll be working on in you know, future generations of television and movies that are representing trans people. It would be nice to have more trans performers in these roles, but there are some, which is a huge development in terms of where we were just a few years ago. So the fact that there are characters at the LGBT Center who are actually trans, and Maura's good friend who's sort of like helping her learn the ropes, as it were, actually is trans, and those sort of things are just really nice touches and verisimilitude and like a nod to the fact that there are trans actors and actresses. Like, you don't have to have a cisgender person like play them. And that's, you know, just also another conversation about, I don't have any problem with the fact that like a cisgender man played this character. It's going to bring so much more attention to this topic than could have happened otherwise. It's just true. There's just not a trans woman famous enough to play this character, except Laverne Cox. And I don't think she would have made sense as a 60-year-old Jewish person. So, you know, whatever. One step at a time. We'll get there. We will have actual famous trans actors and actresses get to play characters. That'll be great. And won't it be great when there's trans performers who get to play cis people? Like, that'll be interesting. Wow. That'll be really fun when it's like not, it's not like stunt casting. You just hire them because they're the best person for the role. It'd be great. Anyway, that's a long ways away. Sadly. Anyhow. So Transparent, great show. If you're going to order a lot of stuff, it's definitely worth getting Amazon Prime for. Otherwise, you can certainly bootleg it. That's an option. So I would love to hear from all of you about what you thought about the show. Bradley Whitford character. Oh, I don't want to spoil anything. So you just need to watch it. And Bradley Whitford makes this amazing appearance. You're like, what? Josh Lyman from The West Wing? What are you doing here? And there's interesting discussions about the place for trans people and cross-dressers and transvestites and all these different types of people who get something very, very different out of wearing a dress. What are their different places in this world? And I think that those are really interesting things to point out and to talk about and make sure that everybody understands the difference between somebody who is transgender, who identifies as a gender different than they were assigned at birth, a transvestite who enjoys, for whatever reason, just wearing the clothes of the opposite gender or whatever, that they either get kinks out of it or it's relaxing to them or it's just fun or whatever. And then also drag queens is a totally different thing. So that's a drag queen is a male identified person who for a performance dresses up as a hyper feminine expression. So these are all different things. So I am full of gratitude that this show exists and absolutely suggest that you watch it ASAP. Thank you very much. Let me know your thoughts by emailing sexwithtimaree@gmail.com. You can tweet at me at @TimareeLeigh. That's @Timaree_Lee. Go to the Sex with Timaree Facebook page, etc. We always appreciate your comments and ratings on iTunes as well. And thank you very much for listening and have a good day.
The Sexuality and Communities Oral History Project, or SCOPE, is a Philadelphia-based storytelling project collecting tales of individuals' sexual identities and how they came about finding or establishing a sense of community. We're looking to chronicle individual journeys of sexual discovery and collective histories of sexuality-based communities like the LGBTQ+ community, kink and BDSM communities, poly, queer, leather, trans, asexual, intersex communities, and more. Currently, we're running our Indiegogo campaign to raise funds for the equipment and supplies that we need to get started. Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/scohp to find our Indiegogo and see how you can contribute. We thank you for all of your time and consideration.
Hey, you. Do you like patriarchy? Do you like the opposite of patriarchy? Do you ever find yourself patriarchal when you least expect it? Like touching someone's knee without their consent? I know I have. Join me in my audio quest to forge a feminist queer landscape of people in context. Good, bad, collapsing the construction that good and bad exist in opposition. Humble Mumbles. It's a podcast. Now available on Bandcamp and iTunes.
Thank you for listening to Sex with Timory. Sex with Timory, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimory.com, Sex with Timory on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timory_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.